Let's try that again. Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Lamanti. That was fun.
Yeah, we are here at a distance, but we are right with you on the radio. We'd love to hear you call us at 747-5877. We'll do our best to do the technology here and answer your call live on the phone. If you don't want to talk on the phone and you want to talk to our phone answer, Becky Myers, and she will share with us, hopefully, what your question is, and we'll answer it on the air. We've had a few questions come in, so we've got a few topics to talk about. What's going on in your garden, Kitty?
Kind of feels like frantic, let's go, let's go, let's go now. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, wait, and now the temperature's kind of warmed up, the forecast is for continued warming, and actually for me, the semester's almost over, so it's like, okay. You know, plowing. I'm planting and transplanting and keeping things covered and checking my garden scheme so I put things in the right place. It's kind of like full bore. Waiting is over, I guess.
Right. It's an interesting time because you're waiting for this warm weather, and then it's here, and suddenly you've actually already potentially done a lot of gardening, but suddenly it seems like there's so much to accomplish. One thing to know is that May 15th, and actually the forecast for the next several days is very good. And my best guess is that in Sitka, we probably won't have another frost in the next couple of weeks. Now, I'm going to hedge and say we have had a frost in late May. So, you know, there's no guarantee, but the trajectory of the forecast at the moment is looking great. And I must admit, I have my fuchsias out. And I'm starting to think about the super tender things and having them out. I know a lot of people are anxious to get their nasturtiums out.
Yeah, I've moved all my tomatoes out to the greenhouse, well, except for three little stragglers that are left here. So I'm banking on it staying warm. Because even in my greenhouse, because it's not heated, it was getting cool at night for a while. It was not optimal for tomatoes, but I think we are getting there. Now I have to more manage for heat. Is more the issue with greenhouses.
Right, so I have a min-max in my little greenhouse, and we've still had nights in the 30s, even though the daytimes are very warm, and so there's that limitation of a cold night. You can really tell with your perennials how they suddenly start really growing, and that will tell you a lot about the temperature and how consistent it is, and if your nights are staying warm enough.
Yeah, so if you don't have a greenhouse, you don't have to have a greenhouse in order to grow lots of different plants in Southeast Alaska. Greenhouse is nice for tomatoes. It's probably nice for basil, things like that. But outside, it's like my peas are growing. I have fava beans out there. If I was a little more on the ball, I'd have potatoes because it's fine to have those. They're going in soon. It's basically just time to get going with things if you have time. It's not, I don't want to give you like, oh my gosh, if you don't do it right now, you're late. I will never want to give you that message, at least not for the next month or so. After a while, you start getting like, you're kind of pushing it for some things, but you can always keep reseeding things, all your greens for quite some time. And for that matter, if you have a good place to hold a lot of crops, you can keep sowing into July.
Successive seeding is a thing. So we wanted to talk a little bit today about planting and transplanting. We've touched on this before, but it starts with picking a good plant if you're buying one at the nursery, or choosing from if you've started from seed and you have several to choose from and more than you're actually going to plant out. Pick the right ones.
Right. So size matters. For some things. And what I mean by size matters in this case is pick the right plant for the right place. You know, actually read that tag and see how big it is and then add some and plan accordingly. So if you're buying a shrub or whatever, you want to make sure that that shrub is the right one for the place that you want to put it in or the tree or whatever. So believe that. And then I always add more because things get big here. I mean, my 6x6 rhododendron allegedly is like 12x6. So things just plan for size. And then I also think this is a really good time to actually buy starts, you know, young plants, because they'll have spent the least time in pots.
So what kind of start are you talking about? What do you mean?
I forgot to start calendulas this year. All the things that I started, I didn't buy any calendulas. Or I didn't start any calendulas from seed. They're not hard to start from seed. I just didn't manage to remember to do it. So I'll go out and buy, you know, these are annuals here. Sometimes they'll stick around for another year. Actually, some of them, depending on the winter we have, they'll stick around. So I will buy those. And I like to buy them early. And I like to buy them before they're flowering, honestly, because even though they're repeat flowers, I want them to do all of their beautiful blooming time in my garden, not necessarily in the nursery. And so the sooner you get them, the better.
Right. It's always difficult when you are at the nursery and you're inspired to pick something because you see it's in bloom and it's fantastic. But if you can remember year to year what you want and catch it before it's actually blooming in its little pack, you'll probably have better luck. It'll get to its blooming state after transplanting. The other thing to pay a lot of attention to for the small starts and the shrub starts is how packed their roots are, how root bound they are. So for a robust start, you can just, you want to take it out of the pot and then you want to score that root ball or open it up just a little bit. So the plant makes sure it has a chance to realize, oh, out of the pot, we need to grow our roots out into all this fresh medium that, have available to us. Whether you're potting it onto another pot or a planter or into the ground, that would be a great thing. If you're transplanting into hanging baskets or pots, it would be really good to go ahead and use some sort of a slow release, long lasting fertilizer. The brand we use, and you can use any brand, but the brand I use is Osmocote. So take a look for Osmocote if you aren't familiar with this kind of product, and then read the label and choose whichever brand you like. But it's that granular, slow release fertilizer, and it really helps your starts, annuals, and perennials that are in a pot or a contained space.
So I know I've said this before, and it sounds very mean and vicious. But when I get my starts, you know, let's say I'm getting my calendulas or, you know, my lettuce or whatever it is that comes in a little four pack. Again, I'm trying to get them slightly smaller than bigger, but you still want them to look healthy. So there's kind of like, it's a judgment call. The nursery does their best. Both places in town or all places in town do their best to give you a healthy start, but it's your job, you know, to kind of pick through. So I pick it out, I bring it home, I wider it up, and then when I'm ready to plant it, I gently pop them out, and then I look at that root wad, and if it's like going twirly around, all the roots are like a solid mass, I take a knife and I cut through that, or I break it apart a little bit, and then I plant it. And that's where it needs extra water. Big time in order to deal with that sort of abusive planting.
Right. The thing that happened to me this week is I planted out a start of a flat leaf parsley that came from the nursery, and it looked great. But when I tipped it out of its little round pot and looked at it, it was actually several parsley plants that have been seeded in and grown on. And I teased those apart because otherwise you're just going to have a pretty choked group of parsley starts. Not every plant can you tease apart and it'll be robust enough. Sometimes that's just a judgment call, but parsley's pretty tough. So I teased those apart, and I actually have three now, and I had some left over that were all sort of bound up together in one pot.
Hey folks, we'll be back with the garden show in just a moment. We're experiencing a little bit of technical difficulty, so stay tuned. We're always testing, trying out new things, and it turns out this thing may not work today, but we're going to try something else. Stay tuned.
Half a mile, which actually kind of helps, you know, slow down the impulse buying. And honestly, I take a list.
We're back,
I
folks.
At least write that list and put it in my pocket. And I may discard that list as soon as I get there, but It's tough, but you do want to plant things on pretty quickly after you get them. So I think that's something to keep in mind. So I was going to go back to the question that I had. I had a question about how much water to give tomatoes and in the greenhouse. And the big problem with greenhouses, they can make a lot of demand on water loss, right? It's hot, things are going, but you need to keep them watered pretty steadily. So I like to just really make sure that they're getting enough water on a regular basis. So you don't want them to completely dry out all the time, because that can start affecting their roots and the development of their roots. If their small roots actually start getting negatively impacted, they're not taking nutrients up out of their soil, out of the soil very well, and they start mimicking sort of that blossom end rot symptoms, which is a low calcium. Most of your potting soil probably has plenty of calcium in it, but if those fine roots start to die off, they can't take it up. So don't let your tomatoes suffer.
I think it's a really, watering can be a tough thing, because if you have a pot, a volume of soil and nothing growing in it, and the weather carries on, cool, then you don't pull that moisture out of the pots and it's too soggy. So finding that balance between enough water if it's hot and sunny, and not too much if it's cool and cloudy. Once you have an established root system in a pot, a little plant does a much better job of helping you regulate the amount of water to give your starts and your transplants. So 747-5877 is the number. Give us a call. We'll either answer your question on the air or do our best to have you live on the air. We'd love to hear from you. The Garden Show is also available on the kcaw.org website if you want to go back and listen again. So fantastic help there. Thought about touching today a little bit on herbs. There's been quite a bit of internet chatter about growing herbs and wanting herbs. And we could just touch base on a few of them that seem easiest to grow here, and whether you should start them from seed or plant a transplant, purchase a transplant, like in the case of my flat parsley, or just get a piece from a friend. So there's a lot of herbs that grow here and grow well. The most vigorous one in my garden is the oregano that comes back year to year, self-seeds and expands. And so oregano is a really great bet. The variety I got is one someone shared with me. They called it a Greek oregano. I have no idea where it started, but it's tasty and beautiful. The other chatter I'm hearing is about cilantro. A lot of people looking for cilantro seeds. And while it's fairly easy to grow here, it bolts so quickly that I rarely find the energy to deal with growing it here. You have to think about picking it daily, because from one day to the next, it bolts so quickly. With the exception of the variety Calypso, which seems to be a slower bolting variety, but still, it's not a season-long thing. So if you're looking to grow cilantro and you never have, know that it's going to be a very short season.
Right. You could set it up so you reseed like every week or two. So you always have new plants coming on if you're really dedicated to growing cilantro. And I guess if you're super dedicated to growing cilantro, you could make it basically its own little black box light excluder. And after a certain number of hours of daylight, you just cover that puppy up. And that way, you know, it doesn't have those long days that are really starting to trigger flowering. But that's, you know, it might be easier to buy it in the grocery store unless you really want to figure out exactly, you know, the biology of your cilantro. It'd be kind of fun, but kind of more fun as an experiment maybe than as a standard practice.
The other ones that are really easy to grow from seed are dill and parsley. They're both plants that you can start from seed and have a good outcome in the same season. The bigger perennial herbs, it can take a while if you're going to start them from seed. And several of those, I think, are worth buying a start. That would be sage, thyme. There's some other ones. There's some things that we treat like herbs that aren't necessarily herbs that do well here, and those would be the sorrels. A lot of people grow sorrel for seasoning.
So in general, the things I start from seed are mostly basil and dill, to be honest with you. Those are the two that I start from seed. It's not that I can't start others, but those are the ones I do, because basil I can keep going. Again, I can restart those plants. You can pinch them off and start new ones. Anyway, so basil is easy to grow from seed, I think. It doesn't like it outside without protection. So I either keep it in the house or in the greenhouse, or build kind of a tent over it, essentially, out in the garden. And the herbs I tend to buy as starts and try to overwinter them. Some of them do overwinter. Would be rosemary, the thyme. I have the Greek oregano, like Molly said, and once I started it, I've got it. It's very happy. Sage tends to last for a number of years for me, but then it will eventually give it up. And lavender, actually. I have lavender plants that stick around. Actually made it super well through last winter as well. But I think it has a lot of drainage. So I think kind of, you know, decide how much fussing you want to do with things. Theoretically, I have kept my rosemary over winter, but not leaving it outside. I've had to bring it inside and take better care of it. But it's nice to have those herbs around.
The other thing about growing herbs is that most of them do well in pots. If you're someone who is a container gardener and you get a lot for a little, the flavoring that you get from pinches of herbs and cook into your cooking is fantastic. And they can keep coming throughout the season. So they're really a good choice. I would agree with you on the rosemary. It's a tough one to keep overwintered, but it's worth buying a start. It does really well here. My lavender made it this year. I'm pretty surprised, but I'm delighted it's coming on strong. And then the one we haven't talked about that is so, almost controversial are the mints. There are many mints to grow, and they're fantastic, and they're really robust. And the ones that are the most robust are the ones that after a while you're fighting with because they're taking over your garden beds.
Yeah, so I have both peppermint and spearmint in my garden beds. And with those two, it's more of a matter of keeping them under control than keeping them from dying. So they're doing just fine. When they're growing in the wrong place, I just dig them up and move them. So you just have to kind of stay on them. But I love mint, so I'm happy to grow it in my garden. Oh, the other one, you know, we didn't mention, Molly, was chive.
Yep, chive is the other one that I would say is the toughest. I had to have some tough love on my chives this year and dig a bunch up and get them out. They were just taking over the herb bed because they're easy and, you know, nothing seems to bother them. They add a lot of value. They're good to eat. The flowers, their purple flowers are great, and the pollinators love them. So chives are a really good bet.
Yeah, there's a few other plants that you can try to grow in your house that would be herbs. So you can actually grow ginger at home. You can grow some of the limes, I think it's called kefir lime, that you use in Thai food. That grows super well, but these are inside plants for sure. They like warmer climates. And I've had both ginger plants do well, and I have two limes that are growing gangbusters. So you can have herbs outside and inside, but just, kind of balance where you need to grow them and what kind of light they need.
Another one is garlic, which we almost grow more as a crop and don't think of it as a seasoning because it's easy here. Couple things about garlic. We normally plant it in the fall, but if you are just getting going on gardening and you want to grow garlic, you can still plant it in the season. In the springtime, I did I did not manage to plant my garlic 1 year, and I planted it in the spring. It wasn't ready at the same rate as the other garlic around town, but it did develop enough that I had a great garlic harvest that I dug a little later. Normally it's like late September to August, depending on the year, but I ended up growing it later, and then I saved it over as I usually do and planted it on. So it turned out great. I had both garlic to eat and garlic to replant that same year. But you usually think about growing garlic a little bit like growing tulips or daffodils. You plant them in the fall.
So remember also that garlic, if you're a first-time garlic grower, that you can cut off the what will be the flowering stalks, the scapes. They look like little curly cues at the end of the stem. And who knows, they'll probably come on in June or July, depending on when you planted your variety and how fast they're going. But those are great. You can eat those. You can preserve them in various different ways. I mostly just like to eat them, honestly, but I have chopped them up and frozen them and vacuum packed them as well. So don't forget to do that. Molly, I think you had a question about dahlias that you said came to you.
Yeah, somebody was saying, well, the dahlias are available in commerce, not only at the nurseries, but at the grocery stores. And they come, you know, in a little plastic bag or a little box. They're a really fun plant to grow. I find that they are a huge slug magnet. And so for best results, I grow them in a big pot on my deck. And that saves me from fighting the slugs. And it also tends to be a warmer place. Dahlias do best with a lot of warmth in our climate, but they're fairly easy if you take care of those two issues. And it is time, almost past time, to start them. You can start them inside as early as you can buy them normally. And you want to give them a pretty big volume pot if you're growing the big dinner plate kind. But they're absolutely gorgeous flowers and awfully fun to grow.
So I did something completely different this year. I was inspired by another friend that was trying it as well. I grew dahlias from seed. So right now I have this entire flat of dahlia plants that are probably about, between 3 and 5 inches tall. That I'm going to need to figure out where to put them because the seed germination success was probably a little bit better than I had counted on. So if you can go either way, actually. At this point, it's a little late to start from seed, but it's something to think about maybe for next year if you're interested in doing that. I'll let you know. I'll keep people posted on how the color variety turns out in this crop of dahlias, but it was actually pretty satisfying to grow them from seed. And I saved my gladiolas and managed to not freeze them, dry them, or do anything horrible to them over the winter, and they are also growing. So I just put them in a flat in the greenhouse, one of those big trays. I filled it, put some dirt in it, spread the gladiolas out, watered them up, and they're going. So yeah, don't forget those kind of more tender sort of bulbs and tubers. You can save them, you can grow them, and they add a lot of color to your garden.
The begonias, dahlias, and gladiolas are great to start inside, and probably it's warm enough for them to be outside, but it's not that warm. So you'll probably get a bigger head start by starting them someplace warm and keeping them inside if possible.
Yeah,
couple of weeks.
Yeah, even those gladiolas that are probably pretty tough because they've spent all of their inside growing time, starting time in the greenhouse, which, like I said, is unheated. I'll probably still, baby them for a little bit longer, and maybe I might have to separate them into more pots, but keep them in there. But once they're, once I feel fairly confident about the weather, I put them right in the garden bed. They do great. They've done great, at least I should say, for me for the last 3 or 4 years, and have made it to flowering. So I feel confident recommending gladiolas at this point.
Right. If you like GLADS and you want to plan ahead, it's ideal to have them on hand and start them inside. That's what we're talking about. So that the shoot of the gladiola plant is maybe a good 6 to 8 inches right about now when it's time to plant out. You really give them a head start. Because if we have a cool summer, it can be tough to get your gladiolas to bloom before the season ends.
For sure. But yeah, no, I think they're doing pretty well. So I have I have 2 out of 3 of those things going. I didn't save any begonias, but I will probably buy a couple because I really like begonias in a basket. In kind of a semi-shady spot, they seem to do really well. And they're a nice foil. You know, you can get these beautiful, clear colors with begonias. I really love the, I know I'm totally enamored with yellow, but those kind of bright yellow begonias to me are just like, they're classy and beautiful and bright.
So the begonias we're talking about are the tuberous begonias, and you buy the tuber, and it's a funny brown cup-shaped tuber. There's also what they call wax begonias, which are annuals that you plant out, and they're lovely too. They don't necessarily do the best in full sun for us, and they're very tender, and so they're annuals. But what we're talking about are the big corms, the big tuberous begonia that most people grow in a hanging basket if they're going to do them.
Yeah, and sometimes you can buy, I've the last few years I've been able to find ones that were already growing, so I didn't just buy the plain corms and need to plant them out. I bought starts in a little 4-inch pot, and that worked super well for me. So I totally recommend them.
Yeah. Well, it's an exciting time. I can't say for sure we're at frost free, but the forecast is certainly looking good. There's lots to do in the garden. One of the things we're still obviously talking about today is all the starting and transplanting, but your earliest perennials and bulbs are finishing their bloom cycle already. And we wanted to remind you that it's great to do some deadheading. And what that means is clipping off the dead and dying flowers, particularly for daffodils, tulips, and other bulbs, because it encourages them to repack their bulb for the following spring. It's shocking how fast that actually happens for our first spring bulbs.
Right, and so when we say deadhead, just cut off the dead flower part. Don't cut down the leaves. Those leaves need to be there to do their photosynthetic business, to pack those carbohydrates into that bulb. Leave the leaves alone, even if they start to, you're like, I don't like how they look. Just leave them at least for a while. Otherwise, count on, if you leave them, you'll be rewarded next spring.
So one of the magic of this spring is that we have a couple of hyacinth bulbs that are reblooming, which is not something you can always count on here. They, we generally don't have much of a warm enough summer, it seems like, for them to grow effectively and repack their bulb. But we've got a couple of them that are reblooming, and it's a particular treat this year. The smell of the hyacinth bloom is amazing.
That sounds glorious, Molly. I was not so fortunate. But I'll have to try that. That's good to know that can be successful.
Yeah, I've always considered them annuals here. And, it's not 100%, but you might try some of the different colors. It seems like these were the deep blue ones are the ones that came back. Don't know if it was a varietal issue or what it was, but really enjoying them. And it's always worth trying things and experimenting a little bit to see what happens in your garden.
Right.
Well, we're getting to the end of the garden show this week. We'd love to hear your questions and your requests for topics. You're listening to the Garden Show on Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. I'm Molly Kabler, and it's great. Good luck in your garden. There's good weather coming up ahead.
So I'm Kitty LeBounty. Thanks so much for joining us. And the one word I want to leave you with is make sure you water your transplants this weekend or these next few days. Have a great week.